May be seated. Thank you. Good morning. The first case set for oral argument this morning is in the matter of the discipline of Jason R. Romsberg. For the board, we have arguing Thomas Freeberg. For Mr. Romsberg, we have attorney Mike Butler, who will be arguing. Allison Sanner is also present. And Mr. Romsberg is also present in the courtroom this morning. We've set this so each side has 20 minutes. We'll start with the board first and hear from Mr. Freeberg. And I'll ask you, Mr. Butler, are you going to divide up your time between yourself and Mr. Romsberg, or what's your plan? Okay. And the only thing I'd say is, and I'll just tell you now, Mr. Romsberg, so you're aware, there may be questions from the board or from the court, and if we have questions, we may ask you to come up and talk about those, just to give you a little forewarning on that. With that, then, Mr. Freeberg, you can proceed.
May it please the court, counsel, Mr. Romsberg. Before I begin my comments, I just want to express the board's gratitude to retired Judge Bradley Zell, who acted as the referee in this matter. He worked very hard to give both sides a fair hearing. He reminded us on a few occasions that he did have retired in front of his name, and he was drugged back into duty, but he did take great efforts to make sure that both sides had a fair hearing. And also, Mr. Butler and Ms. Sanner were very professional in their dealings with the board, and they're be commended for that. Finally, I want to just give a brief thanks to the disciplinary board. This board is a group of volunteers that works extremely hard on behalf of the profession. It's their attempt is to try and govern the members of this bar to keep the standards of conduct of the lawyers beyond reproach. This particular case was one that was, it was a difficult case. The board took it very seriously. They had a lot of discussions, a conference call, and a lot of self-reflection about what was the proper thing to do. They know, obviously, that this court will ultimately make the determination of what is the proper discipline, if any, and the board will accept that as being proper discipline for Mr. Romsberg. Again, it wasn't an easy case, partly because of the extensive attention that this whole ordeal received. It was important for the board to sort through all of that and carefully separate their personal feelings, if any, that they may have had, and make their recommendations based upon the matter that was before them. I don't want to get into the facts of this case because I think that has been well played out publicly for the last 2.5 years.
And just so we're clear, Mr. Freeberg, my understanding is the board really focused on Mr. Romsberg's conduct after the accident, rather than the accident itself.
It did. I mean, and I think as Judge Zell, it's hard to separate from the accident. I mean, it wasn't the board's intention to go in and investigate whether Mr. Beaver's glasses were in the front seat or on the floorboard or at what speed he may have been going or what position he may have been in. It was really what took place afterwards in the series of events that the board focused its attention on. Again, it's hard to separate from what occurred, but it wasn't the it wasn't the fact of the accident or the cause of the accident or the details of the accident that the board focused its investigation on.
Counsel, I'd like to ask you just a quick question about the standard of review. We have findings from the board. We have recommendations from the referee. What is the standard of review with reference to both?
We believe this is a de novo hearing, Justice, that this court ultimately has all of the authority when it comes to the public discipline of lawyers. The board can only make recommendations. Referees, if appointed by this court, make recommendations, but it's ultimately a de novo review. It's always our hope that the court would give deference to the recommendation of the board. In this case, there was obviously a different recommendation from the referee. That's not uncommon. There's been many instances where referees have differed from the board in their recommendations, and then ultimately this court can adopt one or the other or neither and do whatever it deems is appropriate under the circumstances. What I wanted to do today is just talk to you briefly about some of the board's thought processes and rationale, and also to point out the differences in what the board recommended versus what Judge Zell recommended and some of the distinctions that we think are important for this court to consider. When the board undertakes an investigation and reviews a complaint, they do so in trying to apply the rules of professional conduct. Rule 8.4 is a set of loosely related standards of conduct, all under the label of upholding the integrity of the profession. In one of the comments to comment 7 to Rule 8.4, it does say that lawyers holding public office assume legal responsibilities going beyond that of other citizens. And it was in this case, we took the complaint from Alexis Tracy, who had been one of the prosecutors in the Senate impeachment hearing, as you're aware, and that complaint was sent on to Mr. Roundsburg. When he initially responded to the board, it was very vague. I don't really know what to respond. It had been set out in the Senate, the transcript of the Senate hearing, what areas where Ms. Tracy and Mr. Vargo as prosecutors felt that the rules of professional conduct had been violated, and it was on that basis that the board undertook its review of the matter. One of the things the board found problematic was that even from the time that the complaint had been lodged and the responses received up until the hearing in March of 2023, Mr. Roundsburg had not even taken the time to look through the rules of professional conduct and had only briefly looked at it before his hearing before the board back in March of 2023. The board found that problematic. One of the rules that the board and Judge Zell agreed had probably been violated was Rule 8.4E, which is stating or implying an ability to influence improperly a government agency or official or to achieve results that violate the rules of professional conduct or other law. This rule dealt with Mr. Ronsberg's propensity to introduce himself as the Attorney General. There were a couple of law enforcement agencies that had stopped him for speeding, and invariably the conversation led to, I'm the Attorney General of South Dakota. There were certainly other ways he could have handled that. His explanation for this was that his name is difficult to spell, difficult to pronounce, and that he didn't have a course in etiquette on when you are or not to use the label of Attorney General. The board really felt this was a lack of awareness on Mr. Ronsberg's part, that he could have simply said, I'm a state employee, that's why I'm driving a state vehicle. I don't think any of you would introduce yourself to law enforcement if stopped saying I'm a Supreme Court justice. You would just tell them your name and go forward. We really found that to be problematic, and I think Judge Zell did as well. Those tapes and videos are part of the record before the court, and we think that you would find them problematic as well. The 911 call from the Beaver incident, within a few words, the introductory comment was, well, I'm the Attorney General. Again, not the way that it should have been handled, and the board found that to be a problem.
Mr. Freeberg, I want to ask you about 8.4D. Seems to be the primary rule, which is engaging in conduct prejudicial to the administration of justice. And that seems to be the primary rule that the board relied on in its recommendations to this court in imposing the suspension. And then it set out some specific scenarios as to why. It seems like it expanded in front of the referee. Can you talk a little bit about that?
It maybe did. And I think as the we hit a few other areas in front of the referee. I think the board, again, in an attempt not to try and relitigate the impeachment or the accident itself, tried to narrow its focus and maybe narrowed it a little too much and not going into 8.4E or or B during the initial...
Could you really make the case that maybe all those things fall within D, which is, I think, really what the board did? And when they presented it to the court, they sort of said, we think all of this conduct, the way that Mr. Ronsberg engaged after the accident, the actions he took, his responses, all of those things, including arguably the argument that he was in attempts to influence, use his position to influence, all kind of tie into that and the public perception of the administration of justice. And talk about that.
Yeah. Well, and again, you're correct, Justice Jansen. The 8-point D is very broad, really. It's engaging in conduct prejudicial to the administration of justice. I think the board felt that all of these things, as you mentioned, whether it be being less than candid or forthright with law enforcement during his interviews, the use of his name and when stopped by law enforcement, all of those sort of conduct was prejudicial to the administration of justice. And when you couple that with the fact that he is the top law enforcement officer for this state, the top lawyer for this state, and holding out a public office such as that, it gets looked at with a little closer scrutiny probably than it would from other lawyers. And the board certainly felt that that was a factor in making the recommendation that it did. It wasn't that he's held to a higher standard, but when looking at potential discipline, his conduct, it's expected that he would hold himself out better than perhaps all other lawyers who are not holding such a position. One of the areas that the board really focused on that Judge Zell strayed from that we want to point out is that the conduct that is reviewed need not be even charged as a crime or be convicted of a crime. This issue, I don't think this court has addressed specifically. SDCL 16-1936 requires all lawyers and clerks of court to report to the disciplinary board when any lawyer is convicted of a crime, except minor traffic offenses not involving alcohol or drugs. So thus, Mr. Ronsberg was not required to report this to the board. His conduct still was reported. SDCL 16-1937 also lists a number of crimes which can lead to someone's temporary suspension pending the resolution of their disciplinary proceedings. Most of those crimes don't involve the lawyer acting in their capacity as a lawyer. This court's dealt with a number of criminal convictions or acts in the past where the conduct doesn't involve the practice of law, so to speak, where the lawyer is representing a client or is conducting themselves in the course of their law practice. We wanted that to be clear that was the board's position, that it's the conduct and not the crime or the charge that is reviewed. And we think that Judge Zell maybe strayed from that by trying to focus his comments and his recommendation on saying that in acting as a lawyer, he didn't do these sorts of things. He was not acting in his capacity as a lawyer.
So when you say it's the conduct, not the crime, what conduct are you talking about? Are you talking about the accident, or are you talking about what I thought the focus of the board and Judge Zell was, which is post-accident?
It would be post-accident.
That conduct. Justice.
Yeah, I think it's post-accident. Even the interviews with law enforcement, and everybody gets to make their own determination. You'll determine whether that was credible or whether the law enforcement officers were... they testified before the Senate that they felt it was very less than forthright comments that he made to them, and that only acknowledged some of the conduct or the accident details when he was confronted with them. So
I want to maybe focus in on that. I know the board's talked about 8.4C, which is engaging in conduct that's dishonest, fraud, deceit, misrepresentation, and the referee found here, and I think I'm quoting him here, you could not say with any confidence that Ronsberg was dishonest, misleading, uncooperative, disrespectful, respectful or otherwise conducting himself in a manner not befitting of an attorney. I think the board's position is contrary to that, and I guess I'd ask you, what's the board's best evidence or argument that you think would convince this court that Mr. Ronsberg was dishonest or lied or misrepresented some facts?
I think the testimony in the Senate impeachment hearings of the interviewers from North Dakota who conducted the two in-person interviews with Mr. Ronsberg. The board had reviewed those, had asked Mr. Ronsberg questions about those. You know, Mr. Butler has said, well, it's his belief that this is what happened, and you can't punish him for his belief. But the board felt very strongly that he was, again, less than forthright. He was evasive. And to the extent that that violates the rules of professional conduct, they certainly felt it impacted the administration of justice by him not being candid and forthright with.
Is there a particular point in the interview that stands out, or points in the interview that stand out as being particularly illustrative of this position of dishonesty, or this finding of dishonesty?
Probably the one that stands out the most is where his car was in relation to the roadway. He was adamant that he was in the middle of the road. Something jumped out in front of him. But when confronted, and the evidence apparently was very clear that he was not in the roadway. That was one of the charges that he pled no contest to, driving outside the roadway. It appeared to the board that he was not willing to acknowledge that until he was shown proof by the investigators that that had happened. And that was part of the reason for their determination that he had been less than forthright or candid with the investigators. And the investigators had testified that a good part of their job and law enforcement's job is to determine credibility of those people that come before them and that they interview. And they certainly were very adamant in their position that he was lacking candor and honesty in front of them in some respects. Another point where the board and Judge Zell differed slightly was with respect to the purposes of discipline. I think Judge Zell really ignored what this court has repeatedly said are the two primary goals of discipline: the protection of the public from further fraudulent, unethical, or incompetent activities involving the attorney, and the preservation of the image and integrity of the attorneys, the Bar Association, and the legal profession as a whole. The board's focus, and I think it was clear in the transcript from the board hearing, was on the second part of those two goals, whereas Judge Zell focused on number one, that there was nothing that the public would be harmed if Mr. Ronsberg were to continue to act as an attorney in this state. And the board focused its recommendation on the second portion involving the integrity and preservation of the integrity of the bar and the legal profession as a whole. The board also felt, and Judge Zell kind of dismissed, that the precedent that for discipline of this nature was pretty well set in the Janklow matter. While it was structured slightly differently, Mr. Janklow came before this court seeking reinstatement of his license. After his accident and conviction, he voluntarily surrendered his license and then sought reinstatement to this court. So the procedural setting was slightly different, but the board felt that the rationale and the arguments that the court set forth were convincing, that that was a very good case and good precedent in which the board should make its recommendation in this particular case. The similarities are very striking. You've got a very public official, an office holder, a statewide office in this state whose illegal driving conduct resulted in the death of another human being. When we couple that with some of the other factors, the that we've talked about, the lack of candor, the use of his name as Attorney General when dealing with law enforcement, all of those factors led to the board determining that although the crime was a minor traffic offense, the conduct and the post-accident conduct particularly warranted a 26-month suspension, just as Mr. Janklo received. In his dissenting opinion, in that case, Judge Rush deferred from the other members of the court because he felt a longer suspension was necessary. He wanted Janklo to be suspended until his probation was completed. In that, he stated, because of his public position, Janklo's violation of law did more to lessen respect for the law and public confidence in the legal profession. The board would suggest that Mr. Ronsberg's conduct did that much or more. As such, the board would respectfully request that this court accept its recommendation and suspend Mr. Ronsberg for 26 months, the same as Mr. Janklo. We believe that the board got the decision right.
Let me ask you, Mr. Freeberg, the 26-month suspension, I think the recommendation was retroactive back to the date that following the impeachment when he was removed, which was June of 2022.
Correct. And it's been our understanding, at least up through this point, that he has not been actively practicing.
A little different situation, though. In Janklo, his license was actually taken.
It was.
At the time, so it was retroactive back to the date that his law license was suspended, versus here, it was sort of a voluntary on the part of Mr. Ronsberg. I'm not practicing at this point for whatever reasons he
Correct.
Made that decision.
And Janklo would not have been authorized to practice, but we still thought that the similarities were sufficient to recommend a similar.
So based on your recommendation, the board's recommendation, 26 months would take us out to like
August
of this year.
Correct.
There seems to be some confusion in the record about whether Mr. Ronsberg ever privately apologized to the victim's family. What is the board's position on that, and how did that factor into your recommendation?
You know, I don't know that it was a specific factor, but there, I mean, I think the board expected more. He was asked specifically, and it was very vague in his remarks that he said that the Attorney General reached out to the Beaver family, but there were some political problems that he was advised not to reach out to them. And some of the board members were disturbed by the fact that this went on even after all of the political, the civil, the criminal cases had been resolved, that he still hadn't reached out and publicly apologize to them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Butler, you can proceed with your argument.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, I'm going to follow up briefly. You inquired about whether Mr. Ronsberg would be addressing the court. I'm going to reserve approximately the final 5 minutes of my argument today for Mr. Ronsberg to stand before the court and answer any questions you may have. I think some context is important. The original complaint was filed by one of the two prosecutors handling the impeachment hearing. The reference in the complaint was solely to the impeachment process, and in there said he committed malfeasance in office. And of course, there never was any such finding in this case that he did. After the complaint was filed, I did contact my colleague and friend, Mr. Freeberg, to ask if there was something specific that we should be addressing. And I was informed that the board was simply doing due diligence. And there was a reference to the Janklo case. But that's as specific as it got. I say that in part because in their brief, they make mention that at the hearing in front of the referee, Mr. Ronsberg appeared to be more persuasive as a witness than he was in front of the board. But it was only at the time that he appeared in front of the referee did he have some specific insights into what the board was looking at. This case is not Janklow. It's important. In Janklow, there was never an allegation of a violation of Rule 8.4 or any of its subsections. It was solely based on the statutory requirement under 16.19.37 that if you are involved in a serious crime or convicted of a serious crime, you report. The only remaining issue is discipline. It is not what rule or what other rules you may have violated. So there was never an underlying finding that Mr. Janklow had violated Rule 8.4.
Well, that's because he surrendered his license voluntarily. He didn't have a disciplinary hearing where he had his license taken away, correct?
In Janklow?
In Janklow. It came before the court when he tried to get his license back after voluntarily suspending it.
Right. Yes. My point is that here we begin with not that it was a serious crime, because there was no reporting requirement. It was two Class 2 misdemeanors to which no contest pleas were entered. Janklow was an acknowledgement upon conviction that he committed a serious crime, and then the court was there to decide what was the proper discipline to impose on the former governor. That's important because, first, as an initial matter, the question is what rules were violated here. Now, the board found three things that it said Mr. Roundsburg did. Repeated statements to law enforcement officers who stopped him for traffic violations that he was the attorney general. They found those were improper and an attempt to use his office for improper purposes. Here's what I'm going to say about that. The referee reviewed three specific instances, one in Nebraska, one in Iowa, and the 911 call. I would note the one in Iowa was a traffic stop. Mr. Roundsburg did not volunteer that he was the attorney general initially. He was asked once the officer saw his badge in the car when he was getting his license. The officer asked if he was associated with law enforcement. He then responded that he was the Attorney General of the state of South Dakota. It's a distinction that may matter to you.
Counsel, you know, I noticed that in your brief, and is there more than one recording that you are aware of for that particular stop? Because I've listened to the one in the record before us multiple times, and I cannot hear that. What you've just stated in that recording.
One, this was based on Mr. Roundsburg's testimony. Two, the one that I viewed, and again, these were submitted effectively outside the record. They were never offered or played at the hearing, was the voiceover from Kelloland, which said Roundsburg was asked after the officer viewed his license and then responded he was the attorney general. Did I hear Roundsburg say it? I did not. So there's two pieces of evidence. One, Mr. Roundsburg's testimony. Two, then simply the voiceover.
The voiceover meaning who? I'm not sure I understand what you're referring to.
That would have been a reporter simply doing the story. That's what I was able to observe when I watched the video. And again, maybe this matters. In this case, there was evidence that was simply never offered, but it's now referred to. And the same was true not just at the hearing in front of the board, but also in front of the referee. And I would briefly note, here when you asked, Mr. Chief Justice, the specific evidence of dishonesty, Mr. Freeburg referenced the testimony of a North Dakota officer at the impeachment proceedings. That officer never appeared and testified either before the board or the referee, notwithstanding full subpoena power by the board to bring him in. When he did testify at the impeachment hearing, he was subject to cross-examination. One can simply look at the cross-examination, but I would just note the officer acknowledged that his opinions were never reported, except for the first time in front of the impeachment board, and that was his intuitive reaction based on years of training. Judge Zell The finder of fact here watched the same video, came to the opposite conclusion. Here, until you say otherwise, deference is given to Judge Zell's finding. Judge Zell did not find that Mr. Ravensburg was dishonest or unethical or engaged in conduct that undermined the confidence of the or that prejudiced the administration of justice. The only issue that remained is whether, as the board found, was the failure to accept responsibility the basis for an ethical violation. Judge Zell made appropriate findings in which he said the exercise of a constitutional right, in this case, an investigation was ongoing for the better part of a year, cannot be the basis for a finding that a lawyer engaged in unethical activity. He was advised by counsel, he had two, a civil and criminal, to not publicly address what occurred, and that's what he did. He exercised a constitutional right. However offended the board may be by that, it's the same thing any lawyer would advise a client. Don't talk about it. Third,
that's maybe a different window than the board's findings, 8 and 9, they say Attorney General Ronsberg was regarded as the chief law enforcement officer, which I know Mr. Ronsberg said I'm not. Seem to disagree with that. And then they go on and say Ronsberg would not acknowledge that as a chief law enforcement officer of the state, he should be held to a higher standard of conduct. One of the things the board talked about, and it's in the questioning and the transcript, is this whole concept of Mr. Ronsberg staying on as attorney general while essentially a homicide investigation is ongoing for months. Nobody really knows what's going on. A lot of suspicious circumstances. And here is, and I think probably appropriately, the chief law enforcement officer in the state, responsible for, can prosecute a crime in any county in the state by statute, can appoint assistants to investigate crimes throughout the state, has that responsibility by statute. And, he certainly has a right to defend himself as an individual citizen, as everyone else does. But that's a different question than as the attorney general and the public's perception, is he getting special treatment? Is he able to perform his function while this really serious investigation, a death, is going on? That's where I see some issues and some concerns. Can you address that? In terms of prejudicial to the administration of justice and his role as attorney general while this is ongoing?
One, there is no evidence in the record that he ever did anything that would be considered improper while continuing to act as attorney general, whether that be, in fact, I don't even know if he was involved in the making of any charging decisions. So now we're back out into, your point is well taken, but we're back into what Judge Zell, I think, referred to somewhat as an area of speculation. Did the board in its investigation make any effort to find out whether Mr. Ronsberg engaged in some form of improper conduct other than just remaining in office that was prejudicial to the administration of justice? Well, there's no evidence of that.
Could you address the issue with Agent Gromer and Mr. Nat Vig, and then contacting Tyler, the agent involved in polygraphs, so, and whether or not that was some sort of obstruction of the investigation? Do I need to be more specific?
Well, I believe I understand the area. When he was interviewed by the North Dakota law enforcement officers, he was asked if he would agree to a polygraph, and he said he would. And they never followed up again and offered it. I made an inquiry about that, I believe, during the impeachment proceedings, and the answer was effectively, well, we just didn't really feel we could carry that out. That's how that ended. But he offered to take the polygraph, but then they didn't follow through. He said, tell me where to go, and I'll be there. The other issue you mentioned with Detective Gromer is separate, and that involved the cell phone. After Mr. Ronsberg turned in two cell phones to law enforcement, I say afterwards, he did make an inquiry of Agent Gromer, what all can they get off of a cell phone? but there was no effort to influence since he couldn't influence. He was interested in knowing, and he did it in front of two other people. Nothing ever came of that. It's been referenced. Should he have done it? But he just wanted to know, and he didn't have the phones. So that's how those two issues, I don't know if I'm responsive to your question,
thank you,
but how they went. I think back somewhat to the Chief Justice and is what should a person do under those circumstances?
Well, not just a person, but the Attorney General.
The Attorney General.
Not just a regular lawyer, but an Attorney General who, you know, we don't have that case in South Dakota, but there's a lot of cases that talk from other states that talk about somebody in a public role, whether it be a prosecutor and even Attorney General. There's a couple of Attorney General cases where they talk about the fact that somebody in that role is at a heightened standard than an attorney in the bar.
Yeah, I understand that inquiry when they said, well, isn't he held to a higher standard? And my answer would be yes and no. The no part is this. There are rules that govern the conduct of lawyers. That is the higher standard. It affects all lawyers. Then you say, well, is there another standard, a tier three? That's not codified. That's not objectified. But we just say intuitively there ought to be this higher responsibility to you as a tier three lawyer, whatever that may be. And my response is, until someone says it and codifies it, places it into statute or rule, the answer is it may be ideal. But there is not the rule that governs the behavior. Is there a rule that says if he's under investigation for the following, he shall step down. He shall resign. There is no such rule. So, again, I go back to the issue of what rule was violated here? That he didn't feel, that he didn't adequately express remorse, that he was concerned how this offense would impact him in his military and professional career. Those are human reactions. And he did express remorse twice in writing. And before the board, he expressed concerns about his impact on his military future because he was awaiting a promotion to full-bird colonel at the time. That was never even part of the original claim against him. It was just, to some board members, offensive that he would bring up that concerned him. He said before the board that this had changed his life. And they note that in their findings as him being somewhat self-absorbed. I respond by what human being wouldn't wonder that if you'd been involved in a fatal accident? I don't know how you wouldn't. The board here, I don't doubt, was doing its job. However, that's step one. In my experience, when I have represented a few attorneys before the board, the allegations are always very specific. You took trust money. You did this. You lied to the court. You falsified a document. When I made those inquiries, I was just told they're doing due diligence and show up. And as was noted by the Chief Justice, this did seem to be an expanding or moving target along the way. The first findings of the board have now expanded and have continued to expand. The question that Judge Zell was asked is under 8.4 B, C, D, and E, did he find a violation? Under E, he did. Under the other three, he did not. And those findings were based on credibility in significant part, but also Mr. Roundsburg's exercise of his constitutional right to not address the case until it was resolved. And when it was resolved, he did in a letter to, I believe, the Speaker of the House. Can someone go back in hindsight and say, maybe I could have done this differently or better? Yes. However, is that the basis for a rules violation because you didn't? And I've acknowledged that with my client. Would it have been better to simply step down? Might have been. Do the rules require?
Yeah, and I think you didn't acknowledge that to be a violation of 8.4, but I think you acknowledged at the board hearing something to the effect of he would have been a lot better off resigning or stepping down.
He certainly wouldn't be here had he done it. I don't think this ever would have happened, but it did. And now the question is, does his decision to stay on constitute a violation? It may very well, in some people's eyes, be wrong. But again, I would say this, prejudicial to the administration of justice is not so broad, so sweeping, that it simply encompasses every form of conduct that we find offensive or imperfect. Our position is that you have to have some objective basis for finding that the rule was violated. And again, staying on as Attorney General, clearly in some eyes the camp would be, or some would say you should step down. Others would say stay on and fight it for whatever reasons, which he chose to do. Has anyone alleged anything improper during that time that he did? No. So it might be something worth noting, but again, there is a time and place, it seems to me, for the legislature to act if they think it's appropriate. I've got a few minutes left. If there are no further questions, Mr. Roundsburg would come before the court.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Maybe before any questions from the court, Mr. Roundsburg, you have anything you want to say?
Briefly, Your Honor, and members of the court, counsel, that I didn't ask for this accident, and I'm very sorry that it occurred. I took responsibility for the accident as we went through it, tried to comport myself in a professional manner in doing so in the criminal case, the civil case, the impeachment. Was there tough decisions that had to be made as we went along? Yes. But I tried to always act in a professional manner, and I guess I'm sorry again to the Beaver family that this has occurred. It's been 1,251 days, and I count them every day on my calendar, and I say a prayer every day for him and myself and all the members of the family and all the people that it's affected, and I'm very sorry for that. I could address more, but I want to try and give you an opportunity for questions.
Questions from the court?
Well, the disciplinary board and the legislature both found that you lack candor in your responses to the investigators. I'd like you to address that, and you know whether or not this court should take those findings into consideration.
Well, I strongly disagree with their findings. As you know, impeachment's a very political matter. You know, were we just looking at the facts, or were other factors in play? When the Justice Salter's question in regards to, you know, when and where they thought they had a problem with me on the road, I still have questions about some of their findings, but I tried to take responsibility through the court system and the civil process and stuff. I still believe, it still doesn't make sense to me, but I took responsibility. I still know that I went to the right after impact, and that is not in their findings. So that at that moment during the interview, when they said, you're way off the road, that's when it kind of hit me. And like, hey, they could be lying to you. They're allowed to do that. And I said, better stop. You know, take a moment. Be sure you explain to them what you think your position is at this moment. And that's when I agreed to take the polygraph test. And I said, if there's something you don't believe that I'm saying, I'm willing to try and verify it for you. You know, they questioned me extensively about my cell phone usage, and I was just adamant that I was not on my cell phone at the time, but they just, you know, yes, you are, yes, you are. And I stood my ground, you know, and I tried to be respectful in telling them that no, I was not. And then later, now the evidence has come, data and everything else that says, no, he wasn't at the time. So in fact, I was right. And they were wrong, or they were lying, or had, but I believe that they could obviously form that impression that I was being dishonest because they believed something that turned out to not be true.
Do you think you were being less than forthright about your use of the cell phone prior to the accident?
Well, I kept wondering why are we talking about this? Why is this relevant? You know, let's get to the accident. That's what I kept thinking while we were going through the interview.
Well, regardless of what you think it's relevant, do you think it's important to be honest about any questions that are asked of you in an interview of that nature?
I mean, my thought at the time was, I knew I was on my cell phone, but not, I didn't know how much. I agree, you know, I knew I called my father. I knew it. And sometimes it goes down to how they were asking the question, you know, where are you using your phone? Well, I called my father, and then it dropped. And then I called him again to, you know, to follow up. You know, and I'm focusing on calls. I wasn't focusing on text messages or websites or anything like that. I was thinking about calls when they're asking for the most part. And then they bring it up, and I'm like, oh, yeah, of course. But why does that matter? We're focusing on the accident here. So that was some of my thought process.
Do you disagree today with the board's finding that you were the chief law enforcement officer while you were attorney general?
I've always had, and I guess more semantics than anything else, that because I know from other states like Montana, they have like the highway patrol underneath them. So we do not here. So I've always not law enforcement over everything, and that's where the semantics got to be.
But you understood you can prosecute as attorney general. You could, by statute, you could prosecute a crime in any county.
Correct.
In the state.
Yes.
You can appoint assistants.
Correct.
Same as that can be essentially law enforcement officers to apprehend, investigate, and arrest.
Well, yes, I can prosecute in any state. I mean, I guess depending on how your question there, I mean, I can't direct all law enforcement to do everything.
No, but you can appoint assistants to do that.
Correct. I can appoint assistants
under 23310.
I believe that's the correct statute.
So then I have to ask, so you're the attorney general. You understood you were under a potential homicide investigation.
Well, I didn't believe it would be homicide, but, I mean, they were allegations of manslaughter being thrown about, yes.
Yeah, and isn't that a homicide offense?
Yes, but, I mean, I guess when I think homicide, I'm thinking first and second degree that it wasn't.
Okay. In any event, you were under a death investigation.
Yes, Your Honor.
Did it ever cross your mind at that point in time, given the position I'm in, I need to just resign or step down or at least take a leave of absence as Attorney General? I can't effectively do this job. How is the public going to view my ability to perform this role while this is going on and this big cloud of suspicion is over me?
I would say that we had many discussions, me and my legal team and me and my attorney general staff, about such considerations, but based on the facts that we knew at the time, no, we did not believe it affected the job, and I believe that there were other considerations in play that we were seeking to address, that if I would have stepped down would have been hampered or harmed as well.
When you say other considerations, were those?
Well, there's a lot of discussion about if I took a leave of absence, was the office vacant? Could the governor then appoint someone to fill that role in the interim? If I resigned, that was the case, and it was vacant. But there was a legal question at the time, and we had ongoing matters concerning the governor's office at the time. And so we thought that they would be hampered if I would take a leave of absence. And so that was one of the considerations, along with other court cases that I was pursuing, that we did not think that a new appointee might. And
any
so
other questions?
It's not as, I would say and argue that it was not as clear cut as a normal case of just taking a leave of absence or not.
What do you think, counsel, is the appropriate resolution of this matter?
I believe that the matter should be dismissed, Your Honor. I do not. I believe with Judge Zell, I thought for 19 pages, I was reading it, and I said, somebody's getting it. And then the last page, he says, but now we're going to go back to these pre-accident largely matters, which the board said that we're not going to do. You know, how far back do we look into a lawyer's career, for one thing? Secondly, as my counsel started to say, once they're explained and put in context, I don't see where the egregious nature comes from of those offenses. First off, the Iowa one. Yes, I was going home to see my father. He asked if I was a member of law enforcement. I typically use my badge as a wallet. I pull it out. He then asked if I was a member of law enforcement. I said no, that I was the attorney general, because I'm not a certified member of law enforcement, was my thinking. Second, incident was in Nebraska, which is alluded to in the impeachment, but never put in context. They're like, we thought it was admiral, though I went to be, you know, serving my military, but I was using a state vehicle out of state, and how dare I? Well, nobody ever put in context or told that we'd called the Department of Transportation and gotten permission for me to do so. I was in my uniform as a military officer driving a state vehicle. He then asked me, where are you going? What are you doing? This early in the morning. I think it was an early morning stop on the way. I'd been in Yankton for matters of court, and then went on and met with the state's attorney, then went on the next morning to drive down there to act as my role in the military. But then I had to take the vehicle to Sioux Falls to a conference, then come back to Omaha for a conference with the Nebraska Attorney General before coming back. As my counsel probably would tell you, I tend to try and explain all the details, and that's what I was trying to do to him that morning. Of all the things that were going on and why I'm in a state vehicle while I'm in uniform, while I'm out of state. And one of the things that I thought was disturbing in this process, if that's the basis of legal review, we never heard from the officers. We never heard from them below in these proceedings or the impeachment or anything else of what their thought process was. And I would say that while perception is very important to the legal profession, reality is even more important. There's been many things said about me that were false, I didn't agree with, and I tried to comport myself by, in a respectful manner, trying to exercise my rights. It was said in the other chamber of this building during the Senate trial that I did not have a right against to remain silent, and I thought that was abhorrent. I do believe I have rights, and I should have rights as a citizen and as to be able to defend myself in each of these processes and be able to consult with counsel and such. And if going through the process itself offended people, I'm sorry. And I did try to minimize. I never attacked family. I never tried to make bombastic statements. I didn't try to have press conferences to try and get my side of the story out. But I tried to let it play out and work within the system. And that's what I've been trying to do here in these proceedings. Way over time, but your time is...
Thank you, Mr. Ronsberg.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, thank you for your arguments this morning.